us, occasionally, at one time or another, have someone we sense we're very closely connected with. We may not understand it, but we know there is a connection beyond time and space. It is profound. How the Lord made something like this to occur, I can't imagine. But in His incredible wisdom and power, He set in motion beauty which is eternally deep and brilliant. There has yet to be anyone who can completely fathom the wonderful impact and internal workings of friendship. When we have an authentic friend, we know that wherever we are in life, we will always be friends. Even when that person isn't seen for years, we are able to pick up where we left off. As if no time has passed, the connection remains. God, in His wisdom, saw in the heart of mankind a need to connect. So He created something He called friend, which represents a deep and beyond superficial connection, reflecting each human being's need to relate to and join to others, and ultimately connecting with our Creator, who is our friend. Even when we were no friend at all, He was being our friend like no other in the history of forever. Who but God could dream up a concept so necessary to all people? Greeting cards often use the phrase, friends forever. And those people we are given are, in my opinion, one of our greatest treasures. Interestingly, although friends are to be highly treasured, we often easily fail to appreciate them. You would think for someone that important to us, we would ardently defend against losing them. But we don't, and that is a real mystery to me. Like our children, when they are growing up, we often tend to take them for granted, until suddenly they are grown up. Then we want to see them more than they want to see us. It's easy to take a friend for granted. We often don't say enough about them because we somehow seem to think they will always be available. The devoted and steadfast friend is there to make us laugh when we are wringing our hands from the downward spiral of life. A good friend holds our hand when grief washes over us, and there aren't any words left to be said. They aren't afraid to help us avoid a misstep, and even have a knack of looking out for our best interests. Of course, the true friend is kind in their reproval and admonition, but nevertheless is gently dauntless in their pursuit of the integrity of the other person. A friend, a real friend, is hard to find, but when we do, it is wealth for a lifetime. Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Many times, wounds due to the betrayal of a friend are the deepest. They cut like the sharpest knife and are difficult to overcome. I think that's why God says adultery is a cancer at the most rudimentary level. It is a betrayal of friendship and covenant on the level of nothing else. It is murder and wrongness which runs far into the future of not only the betrayer, but also in those who have been betrayed. And to think there are websites, very profitable websites, which aid and assist people to betray loved ones, which I find to be horribly incredible. They make money off the adulterous heart of mankind and say they, the business, have done nothing wrong but simply provided a means of accomplishing what foundationally was pre-existing. Like Proverbs 30:20, after they've eaten, they wipe their mouth and say they have done no wrong. The truth is, the business is designed and run by people, so to blame the propagation of adultery on the nature of the business is to lay responsibility at the feet of those who run it. That business has no ability to know right from wrong, It is merely a vehicle for the heart of betrayal behind it. If we think we have to have sex in order to commit adultery, we are wrong. The betrayal was engaged long before our action was set in motion. I'm Social Porter, and this is Outposts, cool jazz and contemplative conversation. A radio-styled production broadcast semi-live from the deck of a rural cafe, which overlooks the broad and beautiful Ocklawaha River, where the trees gently lean over the river's edge and every evening is pleasant. This particular program is admittedly long, but every bit is a worthy listen for pondering. I hope all who listen will think upon the Lord a little deeper and understand His heart for us to know the One who loves us and gave Himself for us, while considering their position in life with all honesty and resolve to follow Jesus. Said that a true friend supports you no matter what. At that, I'm compelled to ask the question then, what is your idea of support? I certainly am all for being a friend, of course, a good friend, reliable and true. But to support the other person no matter what? Well, I'm just not so sure about the no matter what part. Again, what is your idea of support? I figure a good friend has good boundaries, and in those boundaries is a line somewhere which mandates do no harm. I've met people who call you friend, but if you won't help them get what they want, you are held in contempt until you give in. And if you give in, then you're now an enabler, not a friend. A friend is honest, kind, and does no harm. But when is straightforward honesty, unnecessary bluntness, and what does do no harm mean, according to who? Seems to me that's some pretty subjective stuff right there, and maybe the mature and wise thing to do is to have an idea about what we're willing to do and not do in order to wear the label good friend. Listen, and I mean it. Throw off that chip on your shoulder and listen. The impact of Jesus was so very deeply ingrained in and so profound upon the disciples that they had an understanding only a few of us ever fully attain in this day. the Lord lived friendship, and he put a most definite standard in the middle of it. He would not disavow or disgrace the Father for the sake of others, nor would he empower or enable a friend to be self-destructive. But he indeed loved his friends, and he picked men that would have been considered just a little over the top at being ruffians by today's standards. They weren't suit wearers and didn't appear to be very qualified to hang out with God. His friends knew Torah, but yet were not in ministry, so I've wondered if maybe the disciples were actually Pharisee school washouts of some sort. As I read scripture to discover God's idea of what a friend is, I thought it expedient to first identify just what being a friend entails. I like doing surveys, so I put the question out to others as to what comprises a good friend. One of the first suggestions was that a good friend will support you no matter what. It was a comment most common among the age group 15 to 35. Okay, now this suggestion was probably the most common, and after a little bit it seemed there needed to be some follow-up with a further inquiry as to just how far would a good friend be willing to go in order to support you no matter what. Am I willing to support no matter what someone I know has a drug addiction? On one hand, if I abandon them, I'm contributing to their already dwindling list of relationships. Yes, they did it to themselves, but I also know that most addicts find it easy to return to their addiction, among other reasons, due to a very small circle of already poor friends, with that circle getting smaller all the time. Isolated and alone, they often have no good relationships to lean on. And whatever possibilities of a good friend were in sight, the disloyalty and betrayal, largely driven by their addiction, just alienates any possibilities of that happening. A few years ago, the number one reason for recidivism was due to the influence of quote-unquote friends, who were actually no friends at all. There's an old saying, an addict left to themselves is in poor company. Most typically surround themselves with people who serve as a convenience, meaning there is a relationship there as long as there's a need and the quote-unquote friend can provide. Sounds more like the Hebrew version of a fair-weather friend, which is a picture of a dry ditch that only runs water when it rains. A friend that is only there for you when it's convenient is not friendship, but moral usury. If I'm going to be a good friend to someone I know is an addict, I've come to the table with some rock-solid, tested, and unswerving boundaries. Telling the person no may be the most excellent thing any friend could do. And, you know, if you really love that person, that can be excruciating, but necessary nonetheless. The Lord is our example. We know he loves us and is closer to us than a brother. But there are things people often demand of God to which he simply says, no. Because he is our good friend and truly cares for us in his wisdom, he denies us things, relationships, and situations which would harm us. The Lord is the best friend we could dream of, and even at that, how often do we complain about what he didn't do or wouldn't do? God is the inventor of friendship. He is the original friend, the very personification of the word, and nothing so profound as friendship could have been invented by anyone but God. Interestingly, as I was praying this morning, I had to confess to the Lord that as I try and relate to the idea of friendship, I don't know how to talk about it. Now, don't get me wrong, I've got some concepts that float around in my head, but to actually nail down what I really think? I've realized in my mind I practice some pretty sloppy discernment. Most of my views of what a friend is are largely a construct of experience, TV, examples from things I've read, and by observing others. For many, we call people friends if they serve our purposes. We call people friends if they don't hurt us, only speaking sweet things. We call people friends when they like us on some media platform, even though we've never met them and likely never will. Honestly, I think a lot of stuff in our head is a jumble of undefined things, and it's not just limited to the topic under discussion for this program. It is peculiar to me that we all often operate with a platform of vaguely formed ideas, declaring we know why we think what we think, maybe even claiming to know where we got such strange ideas. Yet we rarely actually challenge ourselves as to the validity of our concepts. And if we do, it is usually the idea to prove we are right, rather than if it's the truth. The Lord is talking to us, partly for reasons of untangling our misconceptions of who He is, who we were in Him, and to better align with His purposes, even in the midst of being constantly discipled by a world without Christ. Often, believers hold that the Lord is their model, but when His concepts don't go with a personal agenda, His words get modified to mean something other than what He meant, and then tagged with, "God said." As I was praying, two words occurred to me: the word bridge and the word boundary. Upon going to look and see what God has hidden of Himself in His idea of friend and friendship, buried in the Hebrew word is the idea of a bridge and also that of boundaries. Friendship has a bridge in the middle, and in this case it is something like a transitional route between two people with free discourse, like a two-way street. As you know, a bridge is built across creeks and rivers, or even a seemingly insurmountable gorge. The bridge is made for the purpose to connect one side with the other. Consider also, friendship which does not contain a bridge is not a friendship, but a mere association, if not straight out moral usury, as was previously mentioned. And that is usury in the sense of taking advantage of others' less than opportune moments. People who simply are around us and keep the relationship going for the purpose of what can be gotten from us, as long as we prosper their agenda, They are using us, and quite possibly, if we allow it all to continue, we are playing the using game also. Is there bridge and boundary in your friendships? To you, is it really a friendship if there is no bridge or boundaries? Or are they just associations of convenience? Like the woman who surrounded herself with friends who weren't quite as smart or attractive as she was, which put her up as the queen of sorts, and they as her minions, yet she called them her friends. They flocked to her because she was smart, lived in a nice place, and because she always had a steady supply of drugs and booze. She used her brains, her living situation, and party goods like candy to draw them to herself. They all seemed to get along, although there were very few realities held in common. They had some good times, called each other friends, and played out a pretended life of being involved with each other. Oh, there was a relationship there, but it wasn't as a friend. It was an association which served a more base purpose. As long as everyone was getting high, laughing, and was generally too inebriated to actually object to anything, they were all pals, real pals. Is that friendship? Was there a bridge and boundaries with real connections there? I believe people in this country are somewhat isolated, partly due to the promotion of the ideology of individualism over community. Individualism strengthens the idea that each person progresses through their own efforts, based on dedication, focus, effort, and the personal decisions that are made. Community confirms that personal achievements come from shared knowledge, common values, and mutual support. Community says society is responsible for the success of all. It appears at one point in Judges 17:6, Israel left the community behind and welcomed individualism with open arms. Maybe they all felt there were too many problems and too little agreement within their community. It all just looked like conflict with no bridge, and it appeared like there were no boundaries either. The word records this attitude in the statement, "And every man did what was right in his own eyes," which eventually left them isolated and alone with no authentic connections. We need friends, but are they real, authentic friends, just associates of convenience or acquaintances? And all the while, our hearts are just nearly lonely to pieces for lack of close relationships. Do we have companions anymore? A companion is a friend type, but the implication is that they aren't an intimate or close friend. Job 24:17 is a friend type as someone we know well. Job 19:21 portrays a companion type friend, which isn't the same as Job 19:19, which is a close and intimate type friend. Scripture denotes degrees of the word friend, but we just call anyone closer than a mere associate as friend. We are sloppy with our discernment on this matter, for there is a noteworthy distinction. We all have friends we hang out with and know more or less. Most of us have friends to whom we are closer and are companions. But honestly, I don't think many of us have intimate friends, close, connected, and trusted, who we are completely transparent with and refuse to betray. I think we are often willing to isolate ourselves to protect our heart from betrayal. You know, I get it. But we also build walls around ourselves to our own detriment to keep our heart from getting hurt. But much of the hurt is something from our own past, which we read into our future. You know what I mean? When we say we are a friend of God, I wonder if we even really know what that means, and do we truly see the value of such a thing? Maybe this is why when Jesus said, "Always with you and never leave you," it is so, so, so huge. God was being a friend to mankind who was isolated from the beginning due to poor choosing and the betrayal in the garden. He was being an example of what a friend looks like. Jesus is the bridge between mankind and the Father, and within him are also the boundaries, which are always healthy for relationships. Friendship with no boundaries is called enabling. Did you get that? Here it is again. Friendship with no boundaries is called enabling. The concept of friend seems to be a very loose term anymore, and we have, once again, squeezed all the God value out of the word, then inserted our own shallow definitions, which more suit our purposes rather than hold up a high standard. Authentic friendship is a work born out of time and trial. When we really connect with others, that's a God thing. Years can go by and one day we see our friend again, and we just take up where we left off, like it was yesterday. The bridge is still right where we left it. Although mankind in general is a betrayer from the beginning, the Lord, knowing the end from the beginning, made a plan to rescue us, regardless of our inclination for betrayal. He even empowers us to overcome our traitorous heart, no longer being betrayers, but to be good friends. Friendship is a God thing for sure, and only He could have come up with something so profound. In Psychology Today, Anais Nin put it beautifully when she said, "Each friend represents a world in us, a world possibly not born until they arrive, and it is only by this meeting that a new world is born. Though some natural loners are happy without them, most of us depend greatly on the company of true friends." As with any relationship, friendships bring support and joy, and even occasionally strife. She also astutely observed that love and friendship never die a natural death. They die because we don't know how to replenish their source. They die because of blindness, errors, and betrayals. They die of illness and wounds. They die of weariness, of witherings, and tarnishings. The whole idea of the word relationship is about the word relate. So, what do we relate to others about that we could call them friend? If we relate to others based on our addictions in common, is that a basis for friendship? After all, it seems having addictions in common, or even similar criminal intentions, seems to make an instant bridge for many. But is that really a bridge of connection constituting friendship? No. Recent research based on a large sample audience with an average age between 20 and 35 suggests that people have significant misconceptions regarding exactly which of the people they consider friends are truly their authentic friends. The study revealed that only about half of participants successfully identified their true friends. Now, I think that is truly troubling. If Abraham was called a friend of God, then what was the bridge and the boundary? In James 2:23, it's pointed out that Abraham was a friend of God, which implies an intimate, close, and trusting relationship. The word friend, as used in Isaiah 41:8, is about grace, divine breath, revelation, and light, which sits between our heart of intentions and leanings and our head of thinking and choosing. It could also mean God revealed in the house. Authentic friendship is a connection of grace between our head and heart. Sort of looks like the idea of peace, doesn't it? Let us carefully consider how we relate to each other and what we mean when we use the word relationship. Addicts relate to each other based on the commonality of their addictions. Although it looks like friendship, it is a false friendship because of the nature of the bridge being their addictions. Commonality in addictions never produces loyalty, kindness, boundaries, and honesty. Also, we should notice, it was God who pointed out that Abraham was a friend. It was not something that Abraham declared for himself. In order for anyone to be friends with anybody else, they have to be in agreement. So I asked myself the question, how is it that Abraham was considered a friend of God? I think probably first off, he and God agreed wholeheartedly all together. You know, birds of a feather flock together and friends tend to think alike. Think now, just because we have political agreements and can relate to the problems in our government Does that mean we are friends or just associates of convenience? Just because you scratch my back and I scratch yours, does that make us friends? Just because you listen to my complaint and don't object, does that make us friends? If you say you'll support me unconditionally, does that mean if I say I'm going to rob the corner store, you will load the gun for me and warm up the car? I can say from experience, in that type of relationship, the moment I won't do what the other person wants me to do, instantly, I am no longer a friend. Boom. Which makes me wonder, were we actually friends in the first place? A real authentic friend has boundaries, and boundaries are absolutely healthy in all relationships. Agreement about right things is part of the real bridge. Amos 3:3. Can two walk together except they be agreed? The idea of the Hebrew text here is interesting. The word agreed is from a Hebrew word which means to fix, appoint, assemble, meet, set, betroth, to meet by appointment, and so on. The sense is not simply two walking in a common direction because they agree to it, but rather two agreeing to and making an appointment to come together, and from there they set out on a journey to a destination together as two in close partnership. Two other points concerning what made Abraham a friend of God was loyalty and dependability, which are also intrinsic to true friendship. I think our twisted idea of loyalty and dependability is where we get our codependent idea of support no matter what, which is another false friendship because of the nature of the bridge. Maintaining loyalty to someone who abuses us, lies to us, cheats us, and betrays us is not loyalty, but codependent victimism. Rest assured, I am a loyal and dependable friend, but know this: if the other person lies, cheats, steals, and acts as a common criminal, rest assured, I will not be silent. The terms of the friendship have been violated, the bridge has been broken, and boundaries have not been respected. Believe it, being loyal or dependable involves boundaries. If I am loyal to you, but you are not loyal to me, the two-way street, which comprises part of the bridge of friendship, is actually no better than a one-way street, reducing the friendship to merely an association of convenience. And like Eric Clapton said in one of his songs, a one-way street only runs just so far. In John 15, 12-13, Jesus gave us a picture of true friends. He also was revealing that he is a friend, loyal and dependable, because he laid down his life for us. From the example of Abraham, it also dawns on me that another element of friendship is the ability to confide. Genesis 18, 17-19 really reveals God's attitude towards Abraham. They confided together, making Abraham a close confidant of God. Walking in agreement about righteous things, practicing good boundaries, being able to relate uprightly concerning being loyal and dependable, and the ability to confide, those are the things bridges are made of which make lasting relationships. I think God saw in Abraham's heart the boundary that said Abraham would not violate those principles, which were the bridge. Not can't violate, but won't violate, will not budge. What's your idea of friendship? How did you come by those ideas, and why do you think they're a good idea? Tough questions, but maybe it's time to challenge ourselves rather than just drifting along with a head full of undefined concepts. Think about it. The date is today, and the time is now. We are called to be bridge builders, creating paths to untethered people. There are a lot more people who have virtually no relationships than most of us would imagine. In fact, some of the loneliest people I've ever met were surrounded by other people, yet still had no connection of value. I found another relationship phenomenon while researching, and that is the people who purposely exclude those who want to connect. They want to closely relate to someone, but they never seem to get the time it takes to develop a friendship. Maybe it's fear. Maybe it's feelings of moral superiority. Who knows but God? Then there are others who say they are introverts, and for some I believe it. But the others, I'm not buying it. I think for many who claim to be introverts, they are far more wounded than they're willing to admit, not allowing anyone in. So rather than be honest about their wounds and aloneness, they claim, "Oh, I'm an introvert." Yes, I'm talking to you. But hear this. I've got room for you just like you are. Your business is your own. And I'm the last person who is going to peep in your windows trying to force a relationship which you don't want. My phone works. Your fingers aren't broken. You can dial the numbers just like me, and I figure, when God motivates you, you'll come out of your hiding place and do something about life in your self-made seclusion. We all give reasons which seem reasonable to us as to why we don't connect. We claim we're too busy, or we tell ourselves there are other things of higher priority and we'll get to it as soon as we can. But, honestly, we are choosing. Yes, choosing. We choose to not return calls. We choose to not return texts. We choose to not reply to email or to write back. You know, Proverbs says we can't have a friend unless we're willing to be a friend. I believe many of us claim we don't need friends, but honestly, it's more that we exclude ourselves before anyone can exclude us first. Yeah, more woundedness with which we justify our own isolation. Maybe we don't connect because we feel others are beneath us. Or they don't prosper our agenda, so we passively just leave them out, setting ourselves up as above and they are below. If any of that is you, resolve the conflict, man. Our lack of connections is largely, not always, but largely born out of our own internal conflict. Be honest, tell yourself the truth and resolve it. Take a chance on others and build the bridge. If you build it, they will come. If you build it, they will come. Of course, not everyone is a friend, but to those whom we do connect with, friendship is profitable and is a worthy investment of our time. Friendship is profitable and is a worthy investment of our time. The Lord is calling every last person on earth to connect, and Jesus is the bridge and boundary. Jesus bridged the gap between mankind and God by laying his life down. He is the bridge between the finite and infinite, making it so no one on this planet must be friendless and unconnected. I am Social Porter, and this has been Outposts, Cool Jazz and Contemplative Conversation. I hope somewhere here your heart has been stirred to consider a little deeper than skin deep. Music was by Yellow Jackets, Michael Volney, Stefano Bolani, Marius Nassett and Lars Danielson, Kurt Rosenwinkel, Paolo Fresu, Frank Spaniol, the Esbjorn Svensson Trio, and Andy McKee. All music use is licensed by BMI. Support is from Living in His Name Ministries, Steve at the Welburn Center, Sisters Coffee Company, Apex Coffee in Tucson, Area 22 Guitars, and Paul and Brent down at White Knuckle Studios. And let's not forget Trinity Bakers, where there's always something good in the oven. Get connected. Ask the Lord to show you the person you can connect to, and let the bridge happen. There is no scripture which says we must be isolated and alone for Christ. We all need friends, real, authentic friends. Not many, just a few good ones. God will show you. You'll see. Be strong and courageous this week. We're closing in on the end, so look up. Your redemption draws nigh. I'll talk to you next time. Amen and adios. Thank you.